This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. I am getting all ready for Monday, August 21st, when I'll be in Wyoming watching the moon pass in front of the sun. It's the first total solar eclipse to pass coast to coast of the United States in 100 years. Okay, maybe you're sick of hearing about the eclipse. Maybe you've had your hotel room booked for a year, like I have. But maybe this whole eclipse is new to you, and you've been living under a rock, or maybe you've just been procrastinating. You got just 3 weeks, short weeks, and if you miss it, your next chance to see a total eclipse of North America will be in 2024, 7 years from now. But we're here to help you. Whether you want to try to drive to the path of totality or make the most of a partial eclipse, yes, you don't have to see the total eclipse. You can still see the partial eclipse. We have some eclipse tips for you. Let me begin with my first guest, Dr. Angela Speck, professor and director of astronomy at the University of Missouri in Columbia. She's also co-chair of the American Astronomical Society's Solar Eclipse Task Force. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Speck.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk a bit about, remind people that this is crossing the U.S. from Oregon to South Carolina, correct?
That's right. The shadow of the moon crosses 14 states total, and the entire U.S. gets to see a partial.
And what makes a total so different from a partial?
Well, so when you have a partial eclipse, there's still enough sunlight that it doesn't go dark. Even if you have 99.9% of the sun covered up with the moon, there's still 0.1% showing. That's a thousandth. And that means it's still a thousand times brighter than the full moon. And that means that the sky doesn't go dark until it's completely eclipsed. So for people who are close to the path of totality, they should try to get to it, because 99% of the eclipse is not 99% of the experience.
Wow. Just that 1% really makes a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you going for the eclipse?
Well, I live on the path of totality. The University of Missouri is right in the middle of the path in Missouri. And so I will be right here in Columbia, Missouri.
Suddenly, a lot of guests are showing up at your place.
You know, one of the things that we've done as a task force and locally is try to figure out how many people are going to come, and that's really hard. I'm pretty sure half of England's coming to my house, though.
I bet. And you don't want to look at it with the naked eye, at least until it becomes total, correct?
That's right. You know, like I just said, even with a tiny bit of the sun showing, you still have so much sunlight that it's too bright and you can't look at it. So you need to either use a pinhole projection, which, you know, older listeners will remember doing, or you get the eclipse glasses, and then you can view it because they only let in a millionth of the light, so it's completely safe.
Well, let's go to the phones to Ben in Frederick, Maryland, who wants to know more about it. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Hi there. Go ahead.
What type of glasses would be the best to use?
So you absolutely should not use regular sunglasses. You know, sunglasses help with what gets bounces off of other things, like bounces off the ground, but you still can't look at the sun with those. What you need to get are proper eclipse glasses. They have a little symbol on that says ISO and looks like a globe. And actually at eclipse.aas.org, we have a list of all the suppliers. They're currently available in lots of retailers, and a lot of libraries have got them for free, and some cities have got them for free. So if you look around, they shouldn't retail for more than about $2 a piece. But you absolutely want to get these because it's the only safe way to look directly at the sun.
You know, Ben, if you go to your Maryland Science Center, Maryland Museum, I'll bet you they have, you know, in the tchotchke shop at the end, they'll have some glasses for you to get there. Are you going, Ben?
Yeah.
Where are you?
We're going to look at from North Carolina.
Wow. Well, good luck to you. You'll remember it the rest of your life, and 7 years from now, there's another one. So there you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's good to get kids started young on this, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is such a great opportunity to get not just kids, but everybody excited about science. And all those kids that get to see it are hopefully going to be more interested in science as a result.
Yeah. If you don't have the glasses, you mentioned the pinhole camera.
Right. So basically, anytime you make a little hole and light passes through it, you can get an image like, and you probably did it as a kid.
Yes,
where
I did.
It was a shoebox or something like that. And you make a little hole and then the light passes through it and it makes an image on the other side of the box. Now, it doesn't have to be a box. There's all sorts of ways of doing it. And in fact, even something like a colander, so, you know, for straining pasta, that's got lots of holes. If you hold that up during the partial eclipse, you'll get images of the partial eclipsed sun through each of the holes. So it makes a cool pattern on the ground. It also means that trees do it like because they have gaps between the leaves. So if you look at the shadows under trees during the partial eclipse, you'll see all these crescent suns. So it's really something that there's lots of ways to improvise it. It's not quite the same as getting to look at it with your eyes directly with the glasses on, but you still get to see what's going on.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid walking home from school and not realizing there was a partial eclipse going and seeing all these little half moons on the ground walking through the trees. Let's go to Nick in Hempstead, New Hampshire. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Happy Eclipse Month.
You too.
I have a question about Bailey's Beads. We're planning on being in South Carolina, where the in the path of totality. And my question is, should we be able to see Bailey's Beads at that point, or is it only at certain points along totality that you're able to see those?
So let me explain what Bailey's Beads are for people who aren't familiar. One of the things that people don't think about is the fact that the moon is not a smooth orb, right? It has topography. It has mountains and valleys and craters. And so as it's moving into place, as it's starting to block out the sun, just at the point where it's almost blocked out, the last bit of the sun that you get to see are the valleys on that side of the moon, where it hasn't, the valleys are still letting in sunlight, but the rest of the sun is missing. And so you get what look like little beads where the sunlight is coming through those valleys. And you get the best view as close to the center of the path as possible. It doesn't matter where you are along the path from Oregon to South Carolina, but you get the most time and the best view of Bailey's Beads if you are close to the center of that path.
Mm-hmm. And one fascinating thing to me about an eclipse, a total solar eclipse, is that everything is so lined up perfectly, the size of the moon, the distance from the Earth, so that the moon just covers the disk perfectly for the eclipse.
So one of the things that, that's certainly true, but actually the sun and the moon and the Earth line up twice a year, and less than half of them give us total eclipses. And it's because, in fact, more than half the time, the moon is too small, and we get what's called an annular eclipse, where you can still see the edge of the sun. And so it is really cool that the size is about right. And in fact, the moon is ever so slightly bigger than the sun, so it actually blocks out just a bit more than perfectly.
You don't mean in real time it's big. It just appears bigger.
Right. So the way you can think about it is that the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun, but it's 400 times closer. So its apparent size in the sky is the same.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, because the moon is moving away from the Earth constantly, is it not? The eclipse that maybe Aristotle saw a couple of thousand years ago is not the same eclipse that we'll be seeing, and there will soon not be an eclipse a few thousand years from now?
Right. So I think the change is very small. The moon is moving away from us, but it's a very tiny amount, you know, sort of a centimeter per century kind of scale. And what that means is that, yes, eventually we will not have total eclipses anymore. We'll just have annular eclipses. And it means in the past, the moon would have been bigger. So actually, when it's at its closest point and is an eclipse, would block out more of the corona, which is the atmosphere we get to see during the total eclipse. So I like to think about it as, you know, dinosaurs wouldn't have seen the same thing as us. If we go back to Aristotle, it's probably not quite long enough ago to be a big difference. But if we go back to, the dinosaurs, they actually would have had a very different view of eclipses than we do.
Would have had a tougher time with their glasses, too. Let's go to Amy in Manhattan. Hi, Amy. Amy, are you there? Amy? No? No, Amy? Okay, well, it's... she wanted to know how does she get to the path if you really can't afford to get to a hotel? Can you go to other places? And I'm thinking, you know, you just drive to a parking lot of Safeway or something like that, and
so,
you just stand there and watch it for a few minutes.
Right. So, I mean, I think it depends on how far you need to travel. And so you're going to have people who live where it's less than a day's drive. You know, 2/3 of the country actually lives within an easy day's drive. Actually, the whole continental U.S. lives within a long day's drive. So if you're willing to drive there and just hang out and then leave again, you can do that. It is going to be busy. And so, you know, you want to leave early enough. You can't just give yourself the normal amount of time it would take to right. drive, say, 200 miles. But the issue is going to be things like, you know, sanitation, food. If you're going to do that, make sure that you carry water in your car. Make sure that you carry some food.
Right.
Because, you know, I live in a college town, and we can't get to eat out on homecoming weekend or graduation weekend because it gets too busy. And this is going to be so much busier. And so for people who haven't booked, the other thing is that, you know, there are people who have been living under a rock and don't yet know or have only just found out that this is such a big deal. And they're starting to look at Airbnb. And so even though we think of it as being completely full from the point of view of accommodation, there may well still be some places where people have either booked more than one spot and they're waiting to see where they want to go, or people haven't decided to rent out a room until just now. So it's worth looking around at what is available.
Okay, let me bring on another guest, one of the founding members of the Science Friday Science Club, because the club's back with this month's challenge, and that is to explain the eclipse. Ariel Zitch, Science Friday's Education Director.
Hey.
Welcome back. Tell us about this project.
Yeah, so we're really excited about getting people excited about the eclipse. And as you probably know, the best way to get the word out about something is to tell other people about it yourself. Person-to-person communication is a really important way to communicate science. So if you know about the solar eclipse that's happening, if you have information about the solar eclipse, we want you to help us get the word out. And you can do that any way. You can make cool GIFs, you can make memes, you can, like, send photos to your loved ones of postcards of where you're going, you can draw maps, you can make signs, you can do a dance, you can write a song. Any way that you can help us get the word out about the eclipse, we want to hear it.
And what do they then get back to us with this?
They do. At sciencefriday.com/scienceclub, there's a form where you can submit your awesome announcement about the eclipse. There's also a great eclipse hashtag eclipse2017, which everyone's using. Share it there. Share it with the hashtag SciFriSciClub. As we get really amazing and compelling announcements for the eclipse, we are going to share them out because we've only got a few weeks.
You betcha. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flato talking with Ariel Zitch and Dr. Angela Speck about sharing the information. And this is a great way to crowdsource stuff on this event.
It totally is. So, like, all of the great things that Dr. Speck was just talking about that people might not know about, right? Like, what are Bailey's beads? Why should I go stand under a tree if I'm not even in the path of totality? Like, what am I going to see that's going to be so special? Those are the types of important communication challenges that we face in the next, like, 18 days? Is that where we're at, Dr. Speck?
17 days.
Oh, my goodness. So time is ticking. If you know about the eclipse, tell other people about the eclipse, because you're probably going to do it in a really interesting and cool way think about.
It would be great to be able to collect everybody's experience about what they actually saw or heard, right?
Absolutely.
We have anecdotal stuff, but...
Absolutely. So as this eclipse is happening, certainly check out eclipse2017.nasa.gov for ways that you can collect data during the eclipse. If you want to collect audio for the Eclipse Soundscapes Project, if you want to collect observations of wildlife animals, you know, wildlife behaviors for Cal Academy of Sciences, Citizen Science Project, go for it. But in the time leading up to the eclipse, one of the most important things that you can do as a lover of science is to tell other people about it happening.
Dr. Speck, you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's all I do right now.
And as you say, there may be late adopters here, and they're going to flood the place.
Completely. Well, and there's a lot of other things to think about, too. Like, what about people who maybe don't speak the English language and aren't reading the newspaper because they can't, right? If you speak another language, take this chance to make another, polylinguistic invitation to see the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed and delighted to find that a group of scientists have been putting together a visually impaired accessible app to view the eclipse. So it's also with the Eclipse Soundscapes Project. It'll be available on Monday so that even if you can't see, you can experience the eclipse in real time, right? So these are all great examples of ways that you can kind of apply yourself to helping the entire nation share in this incredible science experience.
And if you want more information, you go to our website at sciencefriday.com science.friday.com/eclipse. We have a compendium of all the info you want about the eclipse. That's science.friday.com/eclipse. Let me thank my guest, Ariel Zitch, Science Friday's Education Director.
Thanks for having
me. Very psyched for this. And Dr. Angela Speck, Professor and Director of Astronomy at the University of Missouri in Columbia. She's also co-chair of the American Astronomical Society Solar Eclipse Task Force. Good luck to you. Happy viewing, Dr. Speck.
Thank you.